Okay, thank you. That completes our responses to the fifth question. Again, if you're just joining us, this is our U.S. Senate Candidates Forum. We have farm broadcasters and reporters asking questions on agriculture and rural issues. Each candidate has 60 seconds to give a response. And we'll go to our sixth question. Mike Cerisi will answer first, and Kevin Schultz will ask the question.
The last question kind of ties into this question as well, but this has more to do with the environment. What is your take, or how would you look at environmental regulations coming out of Washington, D.C., that affect the farm down the road from here? Should it be brought from up above, or should we... Are you more in favor of local control?
Some of these have interstate commerce implications, so I believe you have to take a look at some level of regulation from the federal standpoint. Let me use feedlots as an example. First of all, what is a large feedlot? Is it a number of farmers banding together and that's the large feedlot, or is it some large corporation that owns a feedlot? That's a whole other issue. But what we ought to do is create a level playing field. The two types of pollution that generally come from that are odor and groundwater. I think there's a way to have federal regulation in terms of a basic minimum for to protect the environment that applies across the board, because it does affect interstate commerce in many ways. In doing that, you have to make certain, you can look at it as an industrial site, but in doing that, you have to make certain that for the smaller producers, the farmers, they get some type of tax credit. In other words, you create the level playing field so that they can phase in this type of remedial regulation activity that does not cost them too much in terms of capital, so that they can compete with larger organizations. That's just one example of that. But there's also a role for local and state regulation.
Clean air, safe water, and healthy environment affects us all. We all require it and request it. The local control is very important, but the federal and state control is more important if it affects certain areas that are harmful to other people or near the farms. The farmers need to have safe environment areas for themselves also. Their children, their growing up children, their children in their community in the future require safe water, healthy environment. And this is our goal of everyone. We can't really just sit back and say the things that are happening to us aren't going to be worse to it. We can't let it be worse to our future children. And we need to put controls on pollution and different things that affect us daily.
I'm Jerry Janicich, the DFL-endorsed candidate for the U.S. Senate. And I don't believe anybody here wants to pollute their land and wreck it for the next growing season. And I don't think anybody here wants to pollute their well. They drink from it. And I don't think anybody here wants to pollute their lake near them, because that's the one their kids probably swim in. Public policy should not be administered from the top down. Public policy should be driven from the people who are experiencing the land or whatever it is up. And I interviewed not too long ago with the Sierra Club, and I'm from northern Minnesota, and my record for them isn't quite as pure as they'd like it to be. In fact, it's lousy. But it's about balancing a way of life and a job. And I think that we need to come to that kind of conclusion.
I grew up in the same farmhouse my father grew up in. It was only 2 miles from where my great-great-grandfather homesteaded when he came from Ireland. And I'll tell you, growing up, I had a very good respect for the natural environment and how we cared for our land, because the thought was that it would continue to be farmed in future Driscoll generations. There are things that we can do at a local level, but there are issues also that go beyond our local community boundaries. Recently, there was a forum talking about the health of the Minnesota River. talking about the lack of water clarity and the pollution that's in the Minnesota River right now. That obviously flows into the Mississippi River, flows down the length of our nation, and I think there are national issues here that come into play when we talk about our standards and how we protect that environment for our entire nation. So there is a role for the federal government in helping us protect the environment.
The theme of my campaign is intergenerational justice, and one of the issues I've mapped out is the environment. And we need to leave the world a better place than we found it. That's the bottom line. As to whether we control this at the local or national level, we need to face the fact that it may be necessary to do some things at the national level. Because what we have is a situation where, two situations, one in which pollution can cross boundaries, as Rebecca pointed out, polluted water that flows into a river passes to another state. The other situation is that if one state allows a higher level of pollution than another, it puts the farmers in the one state at a disadvantage to the other. So it may not be possible for states to regulate this effectively.
I was hoping an environmental question would come up, because that's what I've been doing for the last 18 years. And frankly, there isn't anybody at this table that could carry my pencil when it comes to dealing with environmental issues, whether they're garbage burners or medical waste incinerators in rural communities. So I don't really have a problem with Washington putting some mandates down for certain land spreading and agronomic rates and where on the land these products should be deposited. You know, people used to deposit their manure piles close to the drain tiles and things like that, and we moved them away. So we've come a long way in the last decade on environmental protection. But no unfunded mandates should come from the federal or state government. If they want you to measure your fields and test your soil before you pile the manure on it, that's fine. If they provide the money and the ability and the time for you to be able to do that. So no unfunded mandates, but environmental protection and environmental regulations are appropriate, and I would like to see them happen. Straight across the board, equal for everybody.
This is Mark Dayton. Kevin, your question related to the ideal relationship between federal government regulations and state and local, and I would say in that ideal world, the federal government would use its technological expertise to set the minimum standards based on good scientific and medical evidence, and then state and local governments would apply those and allow for the differences in their respective states, counties, the like. The breakdown occurs, as others have said, as Rebecca said, if her farm, family farm is right next to the North Dakota border, if North Dakota or South Dakota is not following practices, then the people to the east of them are going to be affected. If Minnesota farm builds a giant lagoon in Fillmore County over a karst and that leaches into the Mississippi River, as Jim and Rebecca said, that will affect those downstream in Iowa and other states. So there has to be a balance, and the federal government certainly has to step in when state and local governments either fail to do their jobs or are overwhelmed by economic interests and prevented from doing so.
Thank you. That completes the responses to our environmental question. And again, this is our U.S. Senate Candidates Forum. We have about a half hour to go. We'll go to the next question. Tom Rothman and Ole Savior will answer first.
Throughout the 80s and much of the 90s, Minnesota lost thousands and thousands of dairy farmers. It's possible this state will lose soon its fifth place ranking in milk output. Milk pricing is a federal issue. Do you have any plans that could strengthen milk prices and keep more dairy farmers farming in Minnesota?
I'd like to say thank you. I see two Rod Graham's staffers in the audience. At least Rod Graham takes an interest in our debates. The last time he sent his girlfriend, Christine, to spy on us to listen to the debates. I'm glad to see you guys are recording it. Now, on dairy prices, we need to have a fair price. Ahead of time, we need to keep these farmers. Milk is very important. We need to help the farmers, and I will help the farmers any way I can, because the farmers are going to, are the backbone of this society. The farmers, without the farmers, us city people are in trouble. And I'm a city person, but I tell you one thing. I respect the farmers a lot. I appreciate you. A lot of people in the city, you may feel that we don't appreciate you, but we do. Every time we drink a gallon of milk, we're concerned about the prices because we know the prices that we're paying and the prices that you're getting is very different. And we want to do everything we can to help you, and I will do it also.
I'm Jerry Janicich, DFL-endorsed candidate for the United States Senate. And I'm not an expert by no means in anything, including dairy. But I do believe that our current dairy policy is 60 years old, and it doesn't work. And the same people that are creating and letting a policy that old exist probably should have no TV or no radio and see how well they get along in today's society. I think that early on I committed to serving on ag, and what I would do is roll up my sleeves and go to work and listen to dairy farmers and try to make something work in Minnesota.
Well, the first action I would take is to get rid of the Northeast Dairy Compact because that has done more to hurt prices in Minnesota for our milk than any other single issue. That's a policy that was put in place tens of, decades ago when the system of shipping milk is a lot different than it is right now. I would also support initiatives such as a friend of mine has done, which is actually converting to organic milk. And instead of selling at less than $10 a hundredweight, she's selling milk now for $17 to $18 a hundredweight. Obviously, converting to organics is a tough process, and I think the federal government should assist farmers in that transition period as they transition there. That's not the only solution. Again, the first solution should be the dairy compact, but there are other solutions, too, that we should further explore.
We do need to kill the Northeast Dairy Compact. However, that's been in existence only for a few years, Rebecca. I think you're thinking of the Federal Milk Marketing Order System, which has been in existence since 1937. It's the second problem. It has to do with the distance that a market is away from Eau Claire, the farm is from Eau Claire. And that kind of program that has that kind of regional bias distorts the economy and in the aggregate hurts all of us. That system needs to be revised. The Northeast Dairy Compact has to do with regional power, regional political power. This is the same kind of problem we're having with the medical reimbursement rates. We have to find a way to kill that. It was killed, by the way, with Wellstone and Graham, so they effectively killed this thing, and it was resurrected in conference committee as an addendum to another bill entirely. If anything indicates the problems in our system, that's it.
Leslie Davis. I spent a week on a dairy farm down in Le Sueur. The guy was milking about 800 Holsteins three times a day. And I watched the whole operation. I saw how they pumped the manure out to the fields miles away and cut off the tails of the beautiful Holstein cattle and things like that. But their business is so good that they're putting in another 700, 800, 900 head of cattle. The Davisco Company out of Le Sueur, they're building probably one of the largest dairy feedlots in the state of Minnesota, I think 2,500 or 2,800 head of cattle. So obviously the milk business is not bad for them. If there's a problem for the smaller farmer that's producing milk and not getting enough money for it, then what Ms. Yannis says would be appropriate to think about organics. And if we do want to preserve that small person, that smaller farmer, the lower producer, and we have an interest in preserving them, we should provide them with a little bit of money to help them out. So I have two dairy cows that are on a little farm that children play with at a place in Zimmerman, Minnesota. And the nuns look after them and the kids play with them, and one's a Jersey and one's a Holstein, and I love them. I love cows. A beautiful animal.
This is Mark Dayton. Those who say that federal government rigged marketplaces certainly can rest their case on the dairy pricing system of this country. And it's also, I think, given that the politics and regional parochial biases have been part of government policies for better and mostly for worse for a long time and will continue. So when you get to Washington, you've got to fight it on the terms in which it's played. First of all, I've said that I would ask as my first committee assignment request to be on the Senate Agriculture Committee. You look at the committee, it has neither Minnesota senator. You look at the interests of this state, other major agricultural states. We're about the only major agricultural state who doesn't have a U.S. senator on that committee to look out for our interests. Thirdly, when something happens, as it did last December, and both the Republican and Democratic senators from Vermont slipped that compact back into the bill, I believe that Minnesota and Wisconsin, other senators affected, should have done what I guarantee you Jesse Helms, Strom Thurmond, somebody else would do in that situation, which is to filibuster and hold up the U.S. Senate so they don't go home for Christmas, the millennium, or whatever, until they get that out of there. And that's called fighting for Minnesota, and that's what I do.
You know, the nice thing about politics is sometimes you find yourself in agreement with people on the other side of the aisle. And Jim, I do agree with you. It's asinine, quite frankly, to have a system that was based upon lack of refrigeration, and now it's how far you live from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. I mean, we have to eliminate that, number one. And number two, the Northeast Compact. And the Northeast Compact was basically a issue of raw political power. And the Senate Majority Leader, whom Rod Grams votes with 90% of the time, simply left Rod Grams dangling in the wind. And he went to the Vermont Republican senator and did him a favor. That is an issue that needs to be dealt with. And in the Senate, we each have two senators. We don't have the political power in the House because of the size of our delegation, but in the Senate, we have two senators. We've got to get those two senators working together. That's why we need another Democratic senator in Washington.
Okay, that completes the response to that question. We'll keep going. We'll probably have time for a couple more questions. So we're back to the start of the line again. Jerry Janicek will answer first, and we'll go to Don Wick.
I think everybody in this tent and all the candidates would agree we'd like to have a price for our farmers, but we are in a global market. How does the U.S. government influence prices for our farmers when weather in Brazil or monetary policy in Southeast Asia perhaps has a larger impact on prices, the prices paid to the farmers right here in Redwood County?
This is Jerry Janicek, DFL-endorsed candidate for the U.S. Senate. That's why the WTO doesn't work. We give up our representation. We let somebody else make the decisions for us. They set the price somewhere else. That has a very, very big effect on us. We cannot afford to take ourselves away from that table. When we remove ourselves from that table, we remove our representation. And that causes all of those kinds of problems.
We are, Rebecca Yanish, we are moving towards a global economy. We've seen evidence of that, certainly in the impact. The Freedom to Farm Act was intended to help Minnesota farmers participate more in that global economy. And again, you know, we've seen the result has been decreasing prices to our farmers as a reflection of reductions in export trade. So as I look at this issue, I really have to applaud President Clinton. He recently came up with an initiative through the United Nations to take surplus from the United States to feed school children, provide school lunches in Africa and Asia and other countries where children are now going to school. That could impact 9 million school children that are not going to school right now because their families are too poor to send them there and they don't have the resources. Let's think creatively, not only how the free market system works, but how we can use our food supplies and our excess to help alleviate poverty and to build markets throughout our world.
Jerry, it's a huge stretch to think the WTO has anything to do with our pricing problems in this country. Business needs a standard set of rules. We've all agreed upon the rules. We were the ones that were requesting some teeth. That's why we moved from GATT to WTO. That is not the problem. If we're looking at why prices are so low on the world markets, frankly, the single biggest thing we can do as a nation is to increase our national savings rate. I'm going to point you back. If you remember the 80s, when we were running huge deficits, what happened? The value of the dollar went up. It made our products more expensive overseas. It effectively lowered the price of the world market of commodities. What we need to do is have a high national savings rate that will push the value of the dollar down, that will cause the price for the commodity on the world market to be greater than otherwise would be. We have control over that, and it's something we ought to explore.
Leslie Davis. You know, they talk about globalization and mobilization and millenniums and things like that. But people do business with people locally. If they had the product that people wanted to buy, they'd buy that product. So I'm suggesting that if we diversify, if a guy wants to put in 3,000 to 5,000 acres of soybean and get it Roundup ready and move into that arena in the marketplace, well, that's his option. That's his choice. It's his land, and he can do what he wants to do if he can market his product. But I suggest that you consider detoxifying your fields and start to diversify. And those people with a lack of knowledge that think marijuana and hemp is the same thing are just misinformed and basically ignorant. They're two separate issues. Marijuana and hemp are not the same thing. If you try to grow marijuana where you're growing hemp, you'll destroy your marijuana crop because the hemp will take it over. So I'm talking about a product that's going to be good for you. And who's to tell you in the United States of America that you're a farmer and you can't grow something? Where do they have the right to tell you that? You may not want to do it, but you certainly should have the right to do it if you want to.
This is Mark Dayton. As I said before, I think it's a big mistake to take words like global market and see that as a simple monolith that applies to every industry, every part of the world. It's much more complicated. It varies from one industry to another, and it varies from one era to another. If Phil Knight, who owns Nike, produces Nike shoes in Southeast Asia, they'll do so and move those then from a lower cost of labor point to make his profit. But in agriculture, most countries either are or strive to be self-sufficient in their agricultural production. And they make their decisions about what to purchase on the world marketplace, typically from year to year, to make up the shortfalls that they don't expect. So it's a different market economy. What the United States can do is to affect the price in its own marketplace, which is still the largest in the world, our domestic market, which is where the vast majority of farm receipts come and will continue to come from, and that's where our ag policy ought to put the profit back in.
Part of the problem with the 60-second answers is we get a lot of sound bites, and you all know much better than us this is an extremely complex issue. I talked about market intervention because of the fact we don't have a level playing field in the world today, and we don't. Western Europe, Japan, heavily, heavily subsidized. Their food basket costs much more than a food basket here in the United States. That's why we need some type of market intervention for farmers, much like we had the Farmers' Own Reserve. These aren't subsidies either, Jim. I mean, we market intervene in a lot of places. We market intervene for the minimum wage. Government is policy in creating a level playing field and fairness and justice. That's what it's about. And we need to look at these issues today. Foreign exchange, the currency exchange, another big issue. How we're going to deal with that as part of pricing in the marketplace today. With regard to the savings rates, though, Jim, I will say one thing. Stay tuned, because next week I'm going to roll out a family security bill that is at its center, has savings for all working people.
The Independence Party wants hemp. They want marijuana legalized. There's a reason it's not legalized right now. There's been abuse of it. They do it a lot. They think they can grow their hemp, and it's not right, because with the abuse that they've had in drug society we have now, it's going down the drain. We've got to put a stop to it. The Independence Party, look at Jesse Ventura, of all people. He looks like he's had too much marijuana and hemp in his life. I don't like Jesse Ventura. I think he cheated in the election of 1998. He paid someone $600 to transfer from one party to the next party. As far as I'm concerned, he cheated in that election. He should not have never been the governor of Minnesota. As far as Rod Grams goes, Rod Grams has deserted Minnesota. Rod Grams should be here. I understand he was here yesterday, but he's not here today. He should be here every day talking to the farmers, apologizing for the last 5 years of what he's done in Washington. He has deserted the farmers.
Okay, that concludes the responses to that question. We have one more question, and we'll go to Kevin Schultz from the land for that one.
Value added is a nice catchphrase. Everyone wants to get extra value for their product, and everything's being promoted to, you know, value-added cooperative, this and that. Where are you going to be when that value-added cooperative fails for whatever reason, and farmers are, it sounds like a good deal, and they're locked in now, and they may go down because that cooperative failed as well.
Well, what I'd like to do, Kevin, and this is Rebecca Yanish responding to the question, I would really like to talk about where value added has succeeded. And I think our ethanol industry in the state of Minnesota is certainly a story of success. Now, here's an issue where we're talking about, you know, the prices for our product and trying to build our markets. Ethanol does that. It does it in a sustainable way. I think that it's really a disgrace that our oil and gas producers are pointing a finger at ethanol producers, saying it's the cause of our high tax gas prices. I don't think that's the case at all. If we fear failure, we'll never step forward and innovate and work hard towards better solutions. And I don't think we can be paralyzed for that fear of failure. We need progress. We need to find ways to add the value to the products that are grown in Minnesota so that we can add money to the pocketbook of every farmer in this state.
This is James Gibson. I think the question was, what is the government going to do when the value-added business fails? And frankly, I think this is a business venture investors make, and I think they bear the risks. I don't would not advocate the government stepping in such a failure situation.
Leslie Davis, they're just a stockholder, a shareholder in another business. The fact that it uses corn in order to make their product shouldn't allow them any special protection. But, you know, we're going through an energy revolution, and we can't continue to be fossil fools. We need to move on to the new technologies of the future, biomass, which are very capable of producing energy, and hydrogen, which farmers can produce. I mean, that's what you got. You've got land, you've got water, you've got energy, and you could start to use energy as one of your alternative added value products. You need to think about that, how you can produce vegetables year-round by using the biomass or the vegetative waste from the hemp plant that don't produce any hallucinogenic effects, and use those hemp stalks and biomass closed-loop incinerators that don't produce any pollution, and recycle the carbon that's from what you grow and from what you burn. And there you can have an industry that goes year-round, and people love vegetables, and vegetables are good for you. And if they're organic, that's much more. And you'll beat the rest of the world in that field. Don't compete with thousands of acres of Roundup Ready soybeans. You're not going to make it there. There's nothing I can do to help you in that regard.
This is Mark Dayton. Value-added needs to be seen as the addition to the farm economy, not as the substitute for profit in the farm economy. And if farmers are making those profits and allowed to be farmers, which is what I think most of them want to, most of you want to do and should be doing and make a profit doing, then those who want to individually or as part of a co-op or as a business get into value added, whether it be ethanol or cheese or spam, then it succeeds, more power to you, add into the economy. But those are essentially business decisions, and we err if we say, and if we force through poor farm economics to force people into those decisions that may not be in their or the general economic interest, because that's the only place they can go to try to survive. And that's where we're forcing people into making bad economic decisions.
This is Mike Cerisi. I agree with that part of what Mark said, that we shouldn't be forcing people into these decisions. But when people make a decision to invest in a business, then they do not have a guarantee of success. They have a guarantee of opportunity. If they fail, they fail. However, we must ensure that they've had the opportunity. For example, wind energy. There are tax credits for wind energy. If we've been down in southwestern Minnesota, it's fabulous. Take a look at it. We have enough wind in this state to create energy for 25 million people. It gives our farmers good income. It provides maintenance jobs. These are good investments. That tax credit should be extended to make sure that industry has an opportunity to grow. Same with ethanol. They get a tax credit right now. I was in a plant, Alcorn. They should have the opportunity to grow. Once they do, then they are on their own as anyone else who takes a business risk. But we have to create the opportunity and make sure we're implementing good, sound public policy.
Yeah, ethanol, that's great. We need it. We need to get that money. the gas prices are going so high up. The gas companies try to take advantage of us. Just a couple of weeks ago, they wanted the gas up to $2.50. They were preparing us. They were going to sock it to us good. And now it's starting to go down. The price of gasoline's going down. And because we, as Minnesotans, we started this in the United States. We said, no, we don't want to be cheated. And they were cheating us. They were preparing us to $2.50 now, $2.50. Would you like to pay that a gallon? And with ethanol, yeah, it makes them bring down their prices, and we need that in Minnesota. That's one of the main things that we have. Now, the problem that we're having right now is financing. I'm against nuclear weapons, and we spend billions of dollars every year on nuclear weapons, and we can redirect all that money that's already in the budget right now, right, to the farmers, social issues, and everything. There's billions of dollars that can come back to us right now. Let's get rid of this nuclear weapons threat.
I'm Jerry Janis, a CFL-endorsed candidate for the U.S. Senate, and I believe the same as Mark and Mike, and we shouldn't force farmers to be part of that. But I want you to think about something. If it wasn't for government, would we have had wind power? If it wasn't for government, would we have had ethanol? If it wasn't for government helping somebody take some risk, a lot of rural Minnesota probably doesn't happen. And I want you to think about currently what's happening with technology. Ultimately, if government doesn't help take the risk, in a lot of areas in rural Minnesota, that won't happen. Who took the risks on bringing blacktop and cement to rural Minnesota? It wasn't the private sector. It was ultimately with government. So I think that you have to make sure that you don't discourage risk-taking, and government has to play a role in doing that. Otherwise, I don't believe rural Minnesota gets to be the state it is.
Okay, thank you. Again, we got a chance to go through 9 questions and get responses. I'd like to thank Tom Rothman, Farm Director for Minnesota Farm Network, Don Wick, WCCO Radio Farm Director, and Kevin Schultz, Editor of the Land. Let's give them a round of applause. They had some very, very thought-provoking questions, I think, and really covered a lot of the big issues. Our final, each candidate now will get 2 minutes for a closing response. Again, I'll be timing them just like I have before, and we're going to continue right down the line, so James Gibson will start, and we'll end with Rebecca Yonish.
This is James Gibson. I'm the independence-endorsed candidate for the U.S. Senate. I'm going to use the remaining time, my 2 minutes, just to talk briefly about the theme of my campaign. I'm a small business owner. I've been 5 years in the wholesale heating and air conditioning, and the last 20 years as a computer software developer. My campaign is about responsibility. It's about fairness. It's about justice between generations. It's about doing for tomorrow, doing the right thing for tomorrow, but doing it today. It's about doing the kinds of things that create the kind of world we want 5, 10, 20 years down the road. Intergenerational justice. That means using the entire budget surplus to repay the national debt. To the extent we need additional government spending, I will propose offsetting cuts or additional sources of revenue. What I do not want to see is 1,000 different reasons why we never pay off the national debt. This is an issue that affects the agricultural community because it directly affects our national savings rate, as I've indicated before. Social Security, we need to make it financially sound, backed by real assets, not simply IOUs that we foist on the next generation. We need to educate our kids so they are prepared for an increasingly integrated and interdependent global economy. It's not enough that our kids do well compared to kids in other states. They need to do well internationally. And environmentally, we need to leave the world a better place than we found it. These are all intergenerational justice issues. One last issue, which I'm committed to, and that's to see real campaign finance reform. Because if we're going to see legislation that truly reflects the public interest, we need to change the way campaigns are financed. Thank you for your time.
Leslie Davis, and it's not often a guy that grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and came to Minnesota in 1962, has the honor to be in front of the farmers of America. And I want to talk about the freedom to farm and grow whatever you want, when you want, and sell it wherever you want and when you want. with and or without subsidies. So think about the things that are in the marketplace and the products that are available for you to grow. It's not the same old way. The vertical integration is there. The mergers are taking place. It's a trend that's happening. Organic food is happening. The milk prices are what they are. It's going to take a lot of pressure and a long time to change the compact. No senator is going to go to Washington, D.C. and start to muscle those old boys around, but certainly can be a voice and start to get the people behind and start to energize these issues. But I think this giant surplus that we have, I agree, should go to pay down the national debt. And I'll fight any attempt whatsoever to privatize any portion of Social Security. Social Security is sacred and cannot be touched for any kind of privatization. I'll repeat that again and again. And the rest of the money can be used for Medicare and to finance the restructuring and the moving of ourselves to the energy and the agricultural sector. They need large inserts of money in order to make them sustainable and renewable. And that's what I want to support. And we got a one-time chance in the state. We've already squandered that on a couple of relatively meaningless rebates that could have been done for energy renewal and conservation, solar, wind, and biomass. And conservation, you know, we spend $7 billion in the state of Minnesota to import coal, oil, natural gas, and uranium. Amory Lovins, who is the guru of energy in the United States, says that we can reduce that by at least 50% by installing presently available conservation devices, lights, motors, insulation, and the new microprocessing technologies, and reduce that by 50% and put in a bank $3.5 billion of Minnesota's money. I have those new ideas, those new options, and you can see them at LeslieDavis.com. And I'm honored to be here, and thank you.
This is Mark Dayton. My great-grandfather moved to Nobles County in 1884. He became a farmer as well as a banker before he became a retailer. And my grandfather had a farm in Victoria, Minnesota, where my father grew up. Until just recently, when I unfortunately lost my marriage, I owned a farm with my then-wife in Goodhue County, Minnesota. She raised beef cattle as a girl growing up outside of Fergus Falls, and for the last year or so, people have asked me, were you a farmer? And I said, no, she's the farmer. I'm a farm hand. I said, you know, politicians have a lot of experience shoveling manure, so that was one thing I was pretty well prepared to do. When I was Commissioner of Economic Development for the state in the 70s and the 80s, I traveled around the state and I learned and saw firsthand how important agriculture is to this entire state, and especially the economy of greater Minnesota. As I said earlier, that price affects not only every farmer, but it affects every business on Main Street, Minnesota. It affects our tax base. It affects our vitality. We've got to put those prices and those profits back into agriculture in this country. Now, the 1996 Farm Bill has been a disaster for farmers, and it's been a disaster for taxpayers. It's resulted in record low prices, $1.25 now for a bushel of corn. When I ran for the Senate in 1982, a check back was $1.85 a bushel. It's dropped 60 cents, one-third in 18 years, and the price of everything else has sure as heck gone up in this country. And I find it laughable that the advocates of this policy say, well, you know, we're taking government out of agriculture. Well, they've taken the marketplace out of agriculture. The year before the 96 Farm Bill went into effect, take all the subsidized commodities in this country, total receipts are $28 billion, and 18% of that came in federal payments. Last year, the total receipts had dropped by $10 billion, and over two-thirds of that came from government. I'll change that policy if you send me to Washington.
This is Mike Cerisi. When I came in the tent today, one of the reporters asked me, well, Mike, how much time are you spending in greater Minnesota? And I said, roughly about 60% of my time. He said, why are you spending more time in greater Minnesota than you are in the Twin Cities? There's more voters there. I said, I need to learn more about greater Minnesota. And that's how you become an effective advocate for people. You roll up your sleeves. You learn about the issues. You see the hardship through their own eyes. That's what I've been trying to do. And I've said that I'm not afraid to fight, but I know how to win. And I believe that this election is about two competing philosophies. One, give me my money back. You hear it from Mr. Grams and Mr. Bush all the time. And the other is the common good, and America's always struggled between these two principles. But when we've done best as a people and as a nation, We have invested in each other, in the common good, in education, in health care, in revitalizing rural America in the past through the REA. That's what we need to do now. We need a recommitment to the common good. And it means that you folks not just come to things like this, but you talk to your neighbors and the people in the cities and the towns, and you get out and work in this election. We need your help to change policies in Washington. And if you send me to Washington, I will change policies. When the government of India needed somebody to represent them, we changed policy around the world with respect to the environment. Right-to-know laws were enacted. When women were having their reproductive rights taken away, I changed policies in this country, and those products came off the market. And when the tobacco company hadn't lost in 40 years, and they had buried every one of their opposition, we took them on, and we beat them. We set a standard, and that's the type of senator you want in Minnesota. That's what you have to ask yourself, folks. These are all good people. They really are. But who, if they win, number one, can they win? And who, when they get to Washington, is going to make an impact? Look at the track records and make that decision. If you do that, I will be eternally grateful. Thank you very much for your time and courtesy.
Mike, many smokers are saying right now, give me my money back. I got friends that are spending a lot of money and they think it's going in your pocket. Okay, enough of that. Privatizing Social Security is a no.
You smoke?
No.
Oh.
You'd get my money too, wouldn't you? Privatizing Social Security is a no. Protection is a yes. We can't trust the Republicans. The Republicans are sitting there and they want that Social Security money. That's billions of dollars. They're going to try to get it. They forget what happens with savings and loans in the 70s and 80s. All that, they went bankrupt. They took all that money. Reagan was in there. Reagan says, decentralize it, deregulize it, give it to us. And they took the money. And they can't count to it for today. Where did all that money go? Billions of dollars the citizens had to pay for. The next question is campaign reform. This has been an unfair election already. All my other candidates, they get 5,000 words, and the newspaper says, and only savior. I call them all the time. I yell at them, and they say, well, what are you bothering us for? Don't we do enough for you? 2 words and 5,000? Oh, I said no. And they say, sue us. So I'm telling them, I'm suing you. There's one right down there. I'm suing you, Dane Smith. Hey, get it straight. I know how to spell your name. The other thing is nuclear weapons. Okay, all the money that we have for nuclear weapons, every issue that we got billions of dollars out there in the budget right today. Let's grab that money. Let's give it to the farmers. Let's give it to the social issues. Anything, I'd rather give it to a poor person sitting on a park bench than to give it to a nuclear bomb expert who's just making nuclear. Every one of our children in the future are going to die if somebody ever sits on that button. Clinton and his little girlfriend sit on that button someday, and we are all dead. Do you understand that? This is very serious as far as we're concerned. We don't know who's got their finger on the button. We need to protect ourselves and get rid of all nuclear weapons.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Jerry Janicich, and I'm the DFL-endorsed candidate for the U.S. Senate. Mikhail Gorbachev, when he was asked, why are your people starving, once said, because we've taken a nation of farmers and made them hired hands. We've taken a nation of farmers and we've made them hired hands. There used to be a day, when you controlled where and when you brought your product to market. That's not happening today. And that's because corporate America is writing the farm bill. You know it, and I know it. That has to change. And it's not a fluke that happened. In the last 20 years, if you take a look in the last 20 years, what's going on in our nation. 20 years ago, 50% of the wealth belonged to 10% of the population. Today, 73% of the wealth belongs to 10% of the population. That's not the way this is supposed to work. You know it, and I know it. We have a chance. That U.S. Senate doesn't look like any of you. It doesn't look like any of you. And we have a chance to make that happen. That DFL endorsement has given Jerry Janicich the opportunity to represent you from Chisholm, Minnesota. In a state senate, on a county board, and in the Minnesota House, I've had to work on consolidating schools. I've had to work on plant closings. I've had to work on issues of declining enrollment for our children. That's what I bring to this campaign. That's why I believe I'm the best one suited to represent you there. And thank you for this opportunity, because there's nobody more proud to be standing here than me.
I'm Rebecca Yanish. I want to start out by thanking all of you for being here at FarmFest today and for listening in, and a special thanks to Tim Penny, who's here today as my co-chair of my campaign. One of the criteria Tim used in deciding to help support me in this race was my farm background and the stance on farm issues. I'm very grateful for his support and help, but I really want to let you know here today exactly why I'm in this U.S. Senate race. And it is because I am passionate about representing Minnesotans and bringing a new voice to Washington, D.C. I've told you about my farm background and my family. Two of my brothers followed in my dad's footsteps in farming. Unfortunately, after 2 years of crop failures, my brother Brian took his life because he believed his wife, one-year-old son, and two-year-old daughter would be better off without him. I know the tragedy that's going on in greater Minnesota right now as we are devastated by this loss of farm income. That is something I carry in my heart every day, and is a belief in the change that we need to have happen here that I must take to the United States Senate. The candidates you see sitting in front of you here today, the Democratic candidates, would all be a better vote than Rod Graham's on the farm issues. But we need more than a vote. We need a voice. And that's what I will bring to the United States Senate. It's the voice of our farmers. It's a voice for all Minnesotans. And with your help, it'll be a new voice that I'll bring to Washington, D.C. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And again, we want to thank Jerry Janicich, Rebecca Yanish, James Gibson, Leslie Davis, Mark Dayton, Mike Cerisi, and Ole Savior. And I didn't have to pull the plug on any of them. They kept within their time. I think that in itself was really something. But join me in giving them a big round of applause for participating.